I'd like to call upon Bradley to share a few words of eulogy. Come on.
Thank you all for coming. I know a lot of you had to make special arrangements to be here, and I appreciate that. And thank you for coming to honor my father. I appreciate that. I was going to go over some of his story. You know, my dad was born in Poland in 1939, the same year that the Nazis invaded Poland, and him and his family had a short window of time to escape, and they were successful. And they fled to the east, to Kazakhstan. And then, you know, the family, you know, it was a time of survival. And I can only imagine that's, you know, that's the most important thing. Survived a war, went to Germany, and immigrated to the United States, where my dad was, an immigrant to the United States, and pretty much had to teach himself everything he had to do to survive. He met my mom, and they had a family. And he with a new family, he had to make a home and income for the family. And my dad was a self-taught man. He didn't follow the rules. He didn't read the instructions. A testament to some of the bicycles I drove when I was a kid. But he was very successful, and he did it. He was able to provide for the family, and he was a family man. He was interested in providing for the family, and we went on family trips. And he was in allegiance with my mom, and they were kind of the yin and yang. You know, my dad was the idea man, and my mom was the person that made things work. And throughout my life, they've always been there to support me. I've never felt like I was alone. I always felt like I had a support system, which was a great thing to have. And I know some people aren't that lucky. I look at my dad's life in different phases. The early years with Julie and I, camping trips, family parties. Then Stephanie came along, and that was a different phase in life. I was in college, and they kind of started a different life and did different things. And then, you know, a lot of time passed before he had his stroke. When he had a stroke, it was about 12 years ago, and that kind of changed things. And he miraculously survived that stroke and was able to see his grandkids grow, and Noelle, his new grandchild, which he was so happy to see. He loved his grandkids. Personally, my life with my dad, we kind of reestablished a relationship, you know, as I got older, and we had a shared love of automobiles and antiques and old radios. So we'd go to antique places and swap meets and find old radios and car parts, and we kind of established our own language with each other. Ford, Chevy, Mopar, Bel Air, Crown Victoria, Belvedere, Henry Ford, Virgil Exner, 50s fin cars, 60s muscle cars, power glides, power flights, torque flights, hydromatics, sonoramics, highway hi-fi, wonder bar, signal seeking radios, and push button transmissions. It's our own secret language together. So he loved that stuff. I love that stuff. He was a true person of the 50s. And, you know, now every time I get into one of his cars and take it for a spin, I feel him. His things are still in the car. It smells like my dad. But anyway, I did talk to my dad about, you know, death and you know, in his way, he put it in, you know, radio format, you know, old radio format. And he says, you know, Brad, he goes, we are energy. We are electric. And energy cannot be destroyed. So we go on forever, and we live within our children and our grandchildren, and he was happy with that, and that's what his future would be. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you all for being here. So a lot of what I'm going to say is kind of duplicate of what Brad said, but my dad, and excuse me for looking down so much because I couldn't remember all of this. My dad wasn't your typical dad. He was my dad. Unique, extraordinary, and raw. When I was really young, I was both overwhelmed by my dad and in awe of him. To me, he was like the ocean. Beautiful, mysterious, intense, and at times stormy and unpredictable. He was a strong force, and to be near him was to be swept away in his energy. And I was small and very shy. I remember when I was in elementary school, my mom would drive downtown to pick him up from work every day. She would park and send me to run up to his office to get him, which was quite an adventure for me. I would run up Fifth Avenue to his building, take the elevator to his floor, and wait patiently while he gathered his things to come home. I think his coworkers wondered how such a small, quiet kid like me could belong to such a strong-willed, charismatic man like him. They would often ask me, "What's it like to be Harry's daughter?" as if he were a celebrity or something. And I didn't really know how to respond. What they didn't realize is that beneath that bold facade, my dad was an absolute sweetheart who loved his kids just as intensely as he lived his life, and we loved him back. As I grew older, the power that was my dad became more of a challenge to me. His strong opinions and vision of the world made me rebel. We didn't see eye to eye on much, which I feel badly, and I had become much more vocal and confident in my views. He would say, "Julie, I just call him as I see him," which was his mantra. He, unlike me, was brutally honest and unfiltered, but that didn't make him unkind. He was just unapologetically himself. People really intensely loved him and understood him, or they didn't. And if you really knew him, you loved him and admired him like I did. He had an amazing capacity to empathize with those who also struggled in life. He always gave generously to family, friends, renters, and even people he barely knew. He had a big heart. But still, his unfiltered nature could be easily misunderstood, even though he always had the best intentions. We did have some intense battles, but thankfully nothing that ever tore us apart. I came to accept that maybe the reason we disagreed so much wasn't because we were so different, but because we were so alike. We both liked to argue. We could argue and disagree 1 minute, and it would eventually turn into him talking to me about rental houses, cars, or showing me the latest pictures he took on his camera. In fact, there were times when I would come home to visit, and the minute I stepped in the door, he was already mid-sentence, talking to me about something. No context, no nothing, just straight into it. I was like, "Dad, what are you talking about?" but he just keep on talking. My dad has been a puzzle like this that I've been working on for my whole life. What I've come to realize is that it was always about survival for him, overcoming obstacles and finding solutions. Failure was never possible for him. From escaping the Holocaust, years being a refugee, immigrating to the U.S. when he was 12, battling tuberculosis and measles as a child, to graduating from Garfield High School at age 21 with his head held high, joining the Army Reserves, convincing his boss at W.J. Burns to hire him with no experience, scraping enough money together to buy his first rental house, and marrying the love of his life. He was going to make it through and create the best outcome. He came to this country with nothing but his family and a dream. He made it through it all with sporadic education, a tumultuous childhood, and no real work experience. And he excelled against all the odds. He found ways to ebb and flow, to dodge danger, and to work a system that was always pushing and pulling against him. He didn't have the privilege of being shy or quiet. He had to be strong and prevail. He won the jackpot in life when he met my mom, his anchor and angel. He wouldn't have become the successful person he developed into without my mom's caring guidance, constant love, and never-ending loyalty. He was untethered energy that she helped navigate through life. They were a bonded partnership like no other, both so resilient and committed to their love and support for each other. She's never left his side, and was a selfless, tireless saint as a caregiver to him every single moment until his dying breath. One huge thing that my dad and I agreed absolutely about was the love we both had for my two boys, Adley and Ari, his grandsons, the Kidleys, as he called them. He was now their pops, as they called him, and he absolutely adored them. He showered them with love, attention, and everything fun and good. Going to Palm Springs to visit my folks became such an exercise in kid joyful abundance that I coined Palm Springs the land of yes. Through the boys, my dad was able to experience a joyful childhood. I remember nearly every morning I would find him and the boys happily eating big bowls of chocolate cereal, chocolate chip cookies, donuts, and even ice cream, all while watching cartoons and playing with Legos. It was kid paradise, the land of yes, with my dad enjoying every second of it. How could I say no? And through watching my dad with Adley and Ari, I saw a sweeter, softer side of him, the parent I might not have had myself due to his intense stress with work and busyness and desire to overcome obstacles. But what an awesome pops he was. It changed our relationship forever. We had a big, happy thing to agree on now. Looking adoringly at the boys, my dad would always say to me, "Julie, do you realize how lucky you are? They are everything." And I would say, "Yes, I agree 100%. Almost 13 years ago, when my dad had his massive stroke, yet again, it was his angel, my mom, who saved him by getting him to the hospital immediately so they could administer a life-saving drug. The doctor told us he would either die, be intensely disabled, or walk out of the hospital easily in a couple days. Of course, my dad, the survivor, walked out after a couple days. That didn't end his health troubles, unfortunately, but his ability to fight for life was so strong. It has been heartbreaking to watch his slow decline over these nearly 13 years. My dad fought hard to stay in this world as long as he could, and with my mom and his amazing caregiver, Paul, they were able to give him such a high quality of life, even in the worst of circumstances. Going back and forth to Palm Springs and the Ocean House, sunny day trips to Alki and Kulan Park, dinners and celebrations with the family, my dad didn't skip a beat. But it was his voice and intensity that was previously so all-encompassing before his sickness is what I missed the most now. I am proudly my father's daughter. And today I talk about my dad's outspoken nature like a badge of honor and admire and respect the triumph that was his life. He was a true original, complicated, brave, brilliant, and fiercely committed to providing and protecting his family. I will be forever grateful. Thank you, Dad, for teaching me not to fear change, to take risks, and the importance of being true to myself, resourceful and strong. You will always be an inspiration. Wherever you are now, Dad, I know you'll boldly go forward without being afraid. When my dad was last in the hospital, he had a moment of clarity. I said, I love you, Dad. And he said, Julie, love you too. In the last week when he was drifting away, I told him that he could relax because his work was done now and we are all going to be okay. And I believe he heard me and understood. Dad, you'll forever be with me in my heart and soul. And I know I'll always be with you too. I love you.
Thank you, Julie. Stephanie, can we call you up, please?
Thank you all for being here. I just imagine my dad talking to all of you and being so happy to see all of your faces here. Just like Julie, I wrote this down because I was never going to retain this in my mind. To my dad, you taught me everything I know today. You taught me the only three things I need to fix anything in life are Windex, Neosporin, and WD-40. I learned that Mogan David cures the worst sore throat, that celery is poisonous, though I still don't agree with him on that one. Kmart is the best place to buy jeans. The finest restaurants are Sizzler, Wendy's, and Denny's, which I'll also have to disagree with. Everything you buy must be in multiples, just in case. Never throw anything away. You may need it again someday. Food doesn't go bad as long as it's sealed. You can never have too many light bulbs. Classic cars were made so much better than modern cars, especially with all the chrome that they're built with. And the best tool to get out a sliver is a razor. Dad, all these things I learned from you over the years. But most importantly, I also learned strength, courage, resilience, facing challenges head on without fear. Dad, you've been through so much in your life, but all those things just made you stronger. I'll miss our trips to ocean shores, driving down to Palm Springs on the Pacific Coast Highway, listening to the Stand By Me soundtrack, every song from the 50s and 60s, hearing you talk about the ups and downs of the stock market, which ones to buy, how many shares to make it a meaningful investment. I'll miss hearing you ask for an extra well-done steak at a restaurant, and I'll miss seeing your eyes crinkle as you laugh at a cheesy dad joke. I'll even miss watching you get up from our table at a restaurant to tell the table next to us about your entire life story and your vast collection of classic cars. I'll miss seeing your beautiful photos of flowers and landscapes. I'll miss you, Dad. And I'll always remember how much you loved me and our family. You were our protector, our inspiration. I'm so lucky to have had such an incredible dad. And I'm so glad you were able to spend time with our daughter, Noelle, even if it was too short. Whenever I see a classic car drive by, I'll always think of you. And I'll forever be thankful to have had you in our lives for as long as we did. I'll love you forever, Dad. Thank you for teaching me so much. And I hope you're finally getting a chance to rest. And I want to finish by saying anybody, just in case this doesn't get said, would like to join us at our family's house to celebrate his life and talk about more of these amazing memories, welcome to do so. We'd love to have you. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Friends, this afternoon is the eve of Purim, and as we heard the remarkable memories and information and history of Harry Fuhrer, A man whose very name evokes maybe the sound of fire. And in many ways, his life was forged in fire. Being a Holocaust survivor, he walked through the valley of Europe's darkest years. He saw a world reduced to ashes, families torn apart, communities destroyed, humanity shaken to its core. Many did not emerge, but Harry did. And that is not a small statement. He didn't just survive, but he, as we heard, rebuilt. From ashes to destruction, he came to America, an unfamiliar land, a language not his own, with no wealth or connections or any roadmap, except for what we heard before, the courage and determination. And through these notions and resilience and vision, he built a successful business, he built stability, he built dignity, but most importantly, he built a beautiful family. He leaves behind a devoted wife and three children, grandchildren, all a living testament that evil did not win. And that story is really not the end of this whole idea. The story of Jewish continuity. The Megillah tells us that we read tonight and tomorrow that when so many years back Haman's decree was issued, it seemed to be a final decree to destroy, to kill, to annihilate, total devastation. And we all know the story, what happened in the end of the Purim saga, Ve'nahafochu, as we say in Hebrew, which means it was turned around. Mourning became celebration. Fear turned into joy. Ashes became light. And Harry's life was almost like a living Megillah. The one that we read every year is a life treading along those notions. There was a time when the world tried to erase Harry, when the future looked sealed. But like the Jewish people in the days of Mordechai and Esther, he refused to let that happen. He refused to belong to darkness. Rather, he chose life, and he chose to build, and he chose to persevere. And it's really not called survival. It's more of life, it's defiance. And when everything was tried to be reduced, when the Nazis tried to reduce Jews to numbers, Harry became a name, a builder, a father, a grandfather, a businessman, a contributor to society, and from nothing to everything to strength. Perhaps that is the deepest lesson that I personally can incorporate and we can all think about. This is actually the first funeral I'm involved in, either leading or participating in, that is on the eve of Purim. It is very unusual. And looking at his life from childhood to Seattle, from where he was to where we are today, from Nazism to Judaism, from almost being gone to being this whole family here together, that is Purim. That is the Jewish nation. That is the story of continuity, of miracles, of hope, of thinking beyond, of not allowing darkness to win, of taking a little candle and saying this is going to be the light that's going to turn into a beam of glory, of life, of health and vitality. And it doesn't make it any easier. And therefore, I want to convey our deepest condolences to the family. In this time, certainly now in the world, and for everyone here in the room together, we think of what it all meant for him to go through these challenges, to endure from place to place, from train to train, from boat to boat, from home and apartment and camp and another one, until ending up here. You know, can you imagine how many stops that was? Can you imagine how many they had pillows, beds, linen, blankets. Maybe they didn't even have in most of those places. But from one place to the next, until finally arriving here. And what hit me the most was that plank of wood that they had for that sealed the crate of their belongings. And when they came from Europe to Ellis Island, is that what they had? And they had his father's name, Abram Fuhrer, and that was amazing. And everything they had was in that little crate. Everything the whole family had was in a little crate, closed up with some piles of wood and some ink saying, this is their name. And then here we are today. Can you believe that? Choosing family and future, choosing life, choosing God, choosing faith, choosing what you have inside. You have so much resources inside of you. And Harry, that is a very strong lesson for me and for us. And we have gratitude for what you are and for what you teach and for what you left here with us today. And so I also want to thank the very dedicated carer. Is it Paul? Paul is with us today. And when I came to visit a couple of times, you were there with a smile, with comfort and with care. And God bless you for that. And everyone, I'm sure there are many others in the story of his care. Zichrono Livracha. I want to wish my deepest condolences to his wife, Marsha. And I know his brother, Sam, is here. My deepest condolences to you as well. And his children, Bradley, Julie, and Stephanie. May Hashem give you all strength. And his wonderful grandchildren, Adley, Ari, Noel, and Chloe. Am I saying it? What? Chloe. What? Okay. I got it right. Okay. May the memory of your beloved father, husband, sibling, grandfather, be a source of light and inspiration to you all. May we learn from that how to hold on to Hashem, how to hold on to that, whatever we have, and to use it and to make something out of it and to never give up and to always believe. And Harry, you were an educator on that and so many other things to us. Today is a day that normally we don't have eulogies, but if it's for a distinguished individual that carried the weight of Judaism on their shoulders just because they're Jewish, we extend this openness for that idea. I want to encourage everyone, when we make our way towards the cemetery, to try to refrain from conversations that are not needed. We also have an opportunity to hear the Kaddish and answer Amen, which is a very special prayer that we have. So let's do that as well. And if anyone is a Kohen, we ask that they do not traditionally enter the cemetery. Rather, they can...